There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
No T.S. Eliot, because I left my book at home.
Oh, did you? I thought you were just doing it all like off the top of your head anyway. You just ruined it for everybody.
No, I know. Well, I know some of it off the top of my head, not all of it. And no, well, I could do, but I'm not going to do Germinal 2 days in a row because actually only the opening paragraph was loosely related to cycling. And even that wasn't really that related to cycling. But
do you think I'll be on the podcast today, Ned?
Yeah, my apologies for the shabby performance. In fact,
wasn't yours.
No, I don't think
it
so.
Our host. It was our host. I listened to the edit being put together and sent up.
Yeah. Well, our apologies as a collective.
As
anyway,
a collective,
the absolute Horlicks of audio chaos that came your way yesterday, where it was effectively me just talking and no. And also, like, over the last couple of days, our host platform has inserted adverts in all wrong places and stuff. And maybe it's just happened now. I don't know. I can't tell. Maybe they're going to go to an ad break. Now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. You can't tell. But no, that was disappointing because I've really enjoyed these podcasts. And
hang on 2 seconds.
I'm going to really enjoy this
Sam's
one.
Sam's going. Yeah. You're Sam. Okay.
Perfect. Cheers, Sam.
Cheers, Sam. Yeah, it was lovely to meet you.
Right. Glad you enjoyed that. All right. Cheers. Bye. Cheers, Sam. Yeah. We got a couple of teenagers.
A couple of teenagers in today.
Yeah. Yeah. Max and Sam. Max is doing his A-levels. Good luck with your A-levels, Max.
Well done.
And Sam. Also good luck with your commentary career.
I know. He was very serious.
I think he's probably very good.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sure. Serious into it.
Yeah.
Asking you actually proper, pertinent questions.
Well, Max does the... Max is rides at the track at Herne Hill.
Oh, does he?
And he rides for Vélo Club Londre, which is, of course, is the club that works down there that has produced Ethan Hayter, Leo Hayter, and Fred Wright. Ah. And he works with Fred's dad, Phil, who is a largely out-of-work actor.
As most actors probably are.
And fills in the dull moments when he's not acting, sort of 364 days a year, by coaching down at Herne Hill and by being the man on the mic who does the kind of like excitable commentary.
Oh,
and he's obviously, so Max has started to work alongside him. Okay. So
he's me.
Yeah, I mean, it's two lead commentators.
Two lead commentators, yeah, got you. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite funny that you came in here to record the podcast and you said, oh, I wonder if I'll, in the years to come, whether I'll be working with Max. So you're already sort of like kind of presaging and seeing the end of my career. Yeah, for all I know, behind the scenes, you might be manipulating
it. He's going to scurry out and get his number. Yeah, start palling up to him. Make sure he chooses me.
Yeah.
Today was a little bit underwhelming. I mean, if we say that, it could have been much more underwhelming. It wasn't underwhelming. It was great.
No, it wasn't.
We always want like final crazy racing. It was in bits. Remco Evenepoel lit up the race. Otherwise, it could have been.
He did. He tried really hard to light up the race, and he did to some extent. You're right. The problem that we have, we're just too good at it, David.
What do you mean?
Well,
predicting.
You killed the actual stage win stone dead with about 4 kilometers to go.
Oh no! I know.
when you quite accurately noted that Jorgensen and Remco had exchanged a quick word, and you went, "Well, that's just they've just decided who wins the stage.
They've just done a deal."
Is it? Well, yeah, just a deal that makes sense, and you kind of everyone goes, "Well, everyone, me." I went, "Oh, yeah, you're right." So there's no.
And to explain, that's just old school bike racing respect deal. It's not like a monetary quid pro quo. It's quid pro quo and respect.
Ecosystem.
It's you want to have friends in the peloton. You want to have a good reputation. Your status is often built on reputation rather than results.
What does payback look like for Mattia Jorgensen? What would be a thing that might that might pay him back in the years to come?
Let's say
or in the races to come.
They go up the road. I'm just going to say Liège, and Mattia Jorgensen hangs on to him. And if Jorgensen says to Remco, "I can't come through," Remco will go, "All right, I believe you."
Because we did that thing in Nice.
Yeah, because I know you tell the truth. I know you're a good guy. And it's that those sort of little moves. Or if they, or he could even go up, say there's a group of six of them at the end of a race, and he's got no teammates there, and he's with Remco. Remco, should we go?
Yeah.
And it's like you just build that little bond, cross-team bond alliance that can serve you. And you always end up battling it out. But there are a lot of points in a bike race where you need allies in different teams. And even sometimes teams kind of will kind of perhaps support you somehow. Like if you're dropped off the back and it's nothing, there's no compromise that other team to kind of just help you out a little bit, they will.
Yeah.
So there's just, as you say, it is an ecosystem and you want to have a lot of friends in the peloton because there's nothing worse than kind of finding yourself on a group and realizing that everyone hates you and they're just going to sit on you or just kind of you've got a puncture and your car's not there and another car's not going to stop and help you.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's just mutual respect. And to be perfectly honest, I think Mattia Jorgensen was just on cloud nine. As far as he was concerned, he just won Tour de France. And so he was, I think, the wind was out of sails regards that killer instinct drive to kind of now, this isn't enough.
Yeah.
It's like, this is enough. I've just won Paris-Nice. I am very satisfied with this. I'm not going to get greedy, which is actually a really healthy attitude, you know, because...
And also might have taken some of the stress out of the moment for him.
You got
to,
like,
oh, do you know what? Oh, thank God I don't have to sprint now to try and win the stage as well. I've just taken that pressure away.
For a lot, I mean, Jorgensen, and it was partly, I think, to take the wind out of Remco Evenepoel's sails, was contributing a lot when he didn't have to. Remco did the majority of work as ever.
Yeah.
And he really got it away. He forced the move. He was then not asking questions. Jorgensen didn't have to ride once they got over like a minute.
Yeah.
No, he could have just sat on. But I think in order to, again, pay respect to the race and also just kind of calm Remco Evenepoel down, he was like, "You're not going to drop me. I'm going to ride with you and you're going to see that I'm kind of your match." And that's a little bit of a gameplay as well, just to simplify matters when it comes to the actual end of the stage. Because you don't want to end up in a just tic-tac and then end up taking risks on descents and racing aggressively, especially in wet roads. So, and you called it actually a little way out. Before the final climb, you said, "I think Remco Evenepoel settled for this." And he did try in that final climb, but he just sat at the front and went at his kind of maximum pace just to see if it would have any effect on Jorgensen. Rather than attack him outright, he was like, "I can't, he's just been on me every time. The three attacks I did, he was just glued to my wheel. I may as well just see if he's tired." And because I could see him keeping looking down at his device, his Garmin, Wahoo, whatever. And so I think he knew he was riding at what he could do maximal on that climb.
Yeah.
And at one point, Jorgensen just came up next to him and was like, "You're not going to drop me." And so it was kind of, okay, I understand. And that's it.
Yeah. Because there are two different ways of getting the job done, aren't they? And kind of getting away from riders on climbs, I suppose. And then we saw both of them on display from Remco and Evenepoel today. And they're quite contradictory, aren't they? But I sometimes wonder which of them suits Remco better in his style of riding.
He can do
rider.
Both, because when he won Liège last year, he just rode Pidcock off his wheel.
Yeah.
You know, he'd done these big attacks and Pidcock was on his wheel. And that's Remco, I think, for the majority of his career, his young career, has been able literally to just be able to ride people off his wheel. And so he knows he can do it. And as you say, that's one of his moves. Is kind of he's also got his big punchy attack at very hard moments, but otherwise he knows once he's got people on the ropes, he doesn't really have to worry about doing the jump in again because he'll be less tired than them.
Yeah. Yes, and in the end he came away with the stage win and the polka dot jersey and the green jersey. Mm. Oh, Remco. Bad that the polka dot jersey went to him. Really bad.
I think.
Green, fair enough.
Fair enough, you deserve that.
Yeah.
We deserve the point. We always say this, he did deserve it. He won it.
Yeah, but... yes, I mean, that's on the one hand undeniably true, but there's more than one truth in a bike race, David.
I get your point of view on that.
And it's only because, it's the only reason that he's won it is because they've decided
to double
the points at the end of the final climb of the day, which just, you know, because 80% of the stages in, I don't know, I plucked this figure in thinner, but I'm going to say off the top of my head, 80% of World Tour stages in stage races come from the GC group, or come to get the break doesn't get to the line.
Yes.
So therefore, that tilts things massively in favour of the GC riders who aren't targeting that jersey.
Where did Vlasov come in at the competition?
Fourth or second? I don't know.
Because then it really does. Because then Vlasov would have deserved it because he won the mountain finish yesterday.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is kind of true actually. And also he was racing for it.
Yeah.
Right? Remco clearly wasn't racing for it and probably didn't even know, probably surprised him right now that he's actually, what? Mountains jersey as well? Oh, okay. Well, that he would have maybe not even known. Whereas Vlasov had done that, had looked at the road book, had looked at the standings, and actually super smart, wasn't he? And he went, oh, just as an insurance policy, just in case I don't win this stage or finish on the podium, I'll just nip up here and collect this. And it almost worked for him, but he got dropped on the final climb. So that was Paris-Nice. I don't think it was a vintage edition of Paris-Nice, but I think it had enough intrigue, and enough to kind of think about, and enough.
And Vismalis bike had pulled off a new
historical
thing.
Yeah, I think they are the first team ever to win Tirreno and Paris-Nice in the same year,
which is pretty bonkers.
Yeah, because it's all normally one or the other, isn't it? You put your big star there and you pack that team with all the talent and then it's, you're not going to win the other one. But actually, they've done something very special here.
Yeah.
I noticed that their press officer was driving the team car. That's very
strange. Your friend.
Oh, yeah, my friend. Yeah, still waiting for the reply. Ard. But there we go. So that's, that's...
I wonder if Remco is doing Milan San Remo. Is he doing Milan San Remo?
I don't know. I don't think so. Have a look. He's already had quite a chunky racing program, hasn't he?
With Mads Pedersen from Money Prediction.
Yeah, exactly. We were both surprised that he's not finished on the podium. He's only done Milan San Remo twice, which is quite surprising.
It's a very good race for him.
Yeah, but on this form,
he's
blimey.
Fine. Yeah, he was driving it for Skelmos.
Yeah.
Who, Classman Papon. Skelmos was second in that. So it's Evenepoel, Skelmos, Jorgensen, Pedersen. That's the first four in the green jersey.
Yeah.
It's a GC.
Yeah. I think Remco has a little break now for a month.
Oh, does he?
I think so. I think he probably goes off to altitude or something and he comes back for the Basque country and then the Ardennes.
Oh, he's gone a full Tour de France program.
Yeah, exactly. So he's down to race Basque country, which is the beginning of April, then Amstel Gold, Flèche Wallonne, Liège, Bastogne, Liège. That's probably win. And then the Dauphiné Tour de France.
Oh, nice. We'll have him at the Dauphiné.
So, yeah. And he looks, we're watching the live feed of the podium now, and he's in his polka dot jersey. And
smiley.
He looks smiley enough, doesn't he?
Gave a little inexplicable hand phone victory salute.
A la Mark Cavendish in HTC days.
Yeah. I have no idea what it means.
When Cav did his HTC thing, did he hang up?
No.
He just did the phone call thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was, I don't know. End of conversation.
Yeah.
Hang up. Don't know. Yeah, I don't know why he did that, but it might be quite pointed. There's probably some Belgian journalist who...
Maybe Freebos will ask him.
Maybe Freebos will ask him.
Yeah, and we won't know.
No.
Unless you watch highlights tonight. Yeah. Find out. Watch the highlights tonight, people, and find out what the victory salute was about.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, the will have watched the highlight. Well, they won't necessarily have watched that, but they won't be listening to this before the highlights because I hold it back. And anyway, they probably won't be able to hear it properly because it will have uploaded badly.
So what's next, Ned?
Well, next is for me to tell you a little bit about the little town of Ez.
Oh, yes.
Would you like that?
Love that.
I haven't got much on it. But I can tell you that the Col d'Ez was first introduced in the year of my birth to Paris-Nice.
Was it?
Yeah, 69. And it was the final time trial of the Col d'Aise, was a regular feature from 1969 to 1995 at Paris-Nice. Who won it five times, the time trial?
Sean Kelly.
Correct. Except for one year in 1977 when there was a landslide that meant they couldn't use it. But Aise itself dates right back to the Phoenicians were one of the early civilizations who settled there, because there's some bit of, we're talking about Egyptian archaeology. Was it yesterday in the pod?
Yesterday.
God, blimey, that seems a long time ago. There's some Egyptian artifacts in one of the chapels in the
it wasn't yesterday. It was the day before.
In the Aise.
Anyway,
what did we talk about yesterday in the pod? Oh, UAE.
Yeah.
As bomber pilots and chaos magic.
Chaos magic, that was it, and cults.
We haven't had any Brandon McNulty
AI generated. I know, I'm worried people listen that deep into the podcast if they downloaded the first version.
All right, let's do it again. Let's do that call to arms. Brandon McNulty, we want a computer generated AI stuff. We want Brandon McNulty, and this is for a free retweet, like all across all our accounts here. Gain massive traction. Brandon McNulty as a USAF bomber pilot.
Second World War.
Second World War.
Yeah.
Please. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So it dates right back to the Phoenicians. The Romans settled in Aise. Then the Moors came through. Then it was assumed, the House of Savoy, who, of course, used to be it was the Kingdom of Savoy that owned Nice when it was a part of Italy, basically, Nizza. They also then took Aise. So for a long time, it was basically Italian. The Ottomans briefly took it in the 16th century with that marauding Sultan Barbarossa.
Maybe.
He took Aise, and for a while it was under Ottoman rule. In 1706, it got wrapped up in the... And this rang a bell from... Do you remember our guided tour of Girona?
Yes.
Can you remember anything about the Spanish War of the War of Spanish Succession?
No.
See, I couldn't initially, and then I just kind of clicked on that link and went, War of Spanish Succession, what was that? Now, that was a moment of crisis in the Holy Roman Empire when there wasn't an obvious lineage of who takes over next when the Spanish king died.
Right.
And so one faction within the Holy Roman Empire backed so-and-so, and one faction backed another person, and like it split the empire down the middle, and they fought a war over it was King Charles II of Spain who died childless and without an heir that created this constitutional crisis. And
this Habsburg stuff.
Yeah, it was all Habsburg stuff. And in 1706, Louis the 14th, his troops took Aise in the War of the Spanish Succession, and effectively they were fighting for control of the Spanish Empire as well. In 1860, the population of Aise voted to join the French Republic, and it's been French ever since. But it's incredibly close, if you look. It's incredibly close to the Italian border, and it is extremely beautiful.
Extremely beautiful. Well, you could live there. You pay to live there as well.
Pay quite a lot to live there.
You'd have to pay quite a lot to live there, actually.
Yeah.
But it's very expensive.
Yeah. Where was Stephen Roach's hotel in the Col d'Aise?
No, Antibes.
I was in Antibes?
Mm. Just on the edge of Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. That's all I've really got, then. Mm. That's all I've got.
Well, I'll do... Because it's Mother's Day today.
Yes.
So...
What have you done to mark Mother's Day?
I saw my mum this morning and gave her a card and some flowers.
Right.
And I have...
Where did you get the flowers from?
Sainsbury's. There's nothing around, nothing else around there. They were a nice bouquet.
Okay.
I had to do work with what I had.
Yeah.
A very nice card there.
Okay.
I'd like to thank my mum for being just a fantastic mother. I think she's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
And I'd like to my wife is just the most phenomenal mother in the world.
And is listening to this podcast.
And is listening to this podcast. She's hugely disappointed last night that she couldn't get it to work. because I'm just in awe of what she does, especially when I'm away so much. Looking after the kids, running them around, doing homework, keeping them alive, fretting over what beautiful things cook them every night. And she's just a fantastic mother. And I think our children are very lucky.
And a very good cook. I can vouch for that as well. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You do functional cooking, is that right?
Functional cooking, yeah.
Not. I'm quite surprised by that you're not a better... That you're not a bit
if I get into...
In...
Like, rarely I'll do it when I can sense Nicole's cracking. That's literally it. It's so bad. And I have to admit, when I did do it, I'd really enjoy it. But it's
she does it basically.
Yeah,
you could be a little bit chicken nuggety, aren't you, as well? Like bang something in the oven. And take it. No, no.
With the kids, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. To be fair,
It's funny, we didn't really grow up with Mother's Day as a thing, so I've never really got into the vibe of, so that, therefore I haven't passed it on to the next generation, so it kind of gets roundly, soundly ignored. Aww. I haven't messaged my mum, which is bad. Aww. But I saw her the other night, she's very well.
Okay.
She's swimming several times a week and enjoying her life, and she's an outstanding cook.
Yeah.
But I have. She has passed her cooking down to me. I do pretty much all the cooking at home.
I think Nicole's passing it down to our children. Harvey loves cooking.
Well, it's just great fun.
It is.
I like. Yeah. I'm going to cook tonight. It's kind of part of my evening routine. I quite like following recipes. I quite like improvising with whatever's in the fridge. At the moment, I'm obsessed with aubergines.
Are you?
Yeah.
Why?
What
are you doing with aubergines, Ned?
Sweating them down. Frying them quite hard at first, so they go a little bit caramelized into kind of like a dice, big dice sized cubes in a pan, with stuff like some capers and some Kalamata olives and things like that, a little bit of garlic, some cherry tomatoes, just kind of like really nice ones with rich in flavor, a bit of sugar, a little bit of vinegar, like that. And so it's a kind of ratatouille-esque sort of thing, but that's really versatile. You can do loads of stuff with that. You can like bang it in the oven. You can have it with some. You can
put it in the fridge. Is it making it something else the next day?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you can take some halloumi and fry that, and just bang it in the middle of that, and put that in the oven, or just have it with some pasta. Like that. Quite into that.
American national anthem, hand on the chest.
Oh yeah,
look at that. It's pride.
Do you think he votes Trump, Matthew Jorgensen?
Hell no, he's a cyclist.
What does that mean?
They're all quite left. Well, Democrat.
Lance.
Yeah, true. No, he's highly Democrat.
Is he, though?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
What, like avowedly, like publicly, like he backs the Democrats? Because I don't listen to his... listen to his podcast?
No.
I mean, he undoubtedly listens to ours.
For sure, just to get all the information, the actual proper real race information. To actually get some good analysis, country to
We could promote... Should we promote Lance's podcast? Do him a favour, get his listeners up a little bit.
Let's do it.
Yeah, guys, tune into The Move by Lance Armstrong. It's a good up.
We need a full TV production, actually, don't we? A studio, like The Move.
Yeah, he does a bit of that. I genuinely never listened to it. I gather it's quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are going to be so phobic about Armstrong, just toxic Armstrong, so they won't go near it, which I get. That's the kind of position that you can take. But if you can get over that, I gather it's quite entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that as well.
But I can't see that he'd be... I mean, I do remember back in the day when he was racing and we were all talking about him being... eyeing up politics.
That's right.
Was that a media rumor, or was that like that permeated a bit in the peloton as well?
It kind of says a lot about his character, doesn't it, and how people saw him, that you should patron of the peloton, you should be president of the United States.
But it wasn't crazy talk.
It wasn't
was it?
Crazy talk. No, I think he probably for a bit did have it in the back of his mind.
I think so.
Yeah. Alas, no.
I think so. I remember asking him about it before the 2005 Tour de France started. Well, 2004, 2005, the one that started in the Vendée, 2004. And at his big press conference he used to have, and I put my hand up and said, if I were to put £100 on you becoming the President of the United States of America, is that a losing bet? And he gave me a really non-committal answer, saying, I can't say it would be, I can't say it wouldn't be. Like that.
There you go.
With a twinkle in his eye. Bad Republican.
I mean, it definitely does sense to be more Republican, doesn't he?
Think so.
I don't know.
Although the Republicans have kind of taken leave of their senses, haven't they?
That's what I mean as well. It's kind of changed a lot.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to go to our sister podcast to learn more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. What, the rest is
politics.
Yeah. They're doing very well for themselves, that podcast.
That's great.
As well.
I was listening to it today.
Yeah. Was it like Alistair Campbell and
Rory Stewart?
Yeah. And could you only hear one of them and not the other one?
Their production values are quite good, actually.
Are you interested in politics, actually?
I am when I listen to that podcast.
Why? Because we never speak about politics, really.
Well, no, that's kind of my enough of a hit, I think. It is interesting. It's actually got me into it, to be fair.
Right.
Because I definitely wasn't in the slightest. And then actually it was my wife that was listening to it and was loving it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'll give it a listen. I was like, actually, it's really entertaining and interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I haven't really thought about before.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. Not.
Well, that's quite. Maybe between you and me, it might flip a little bit because I'm finding myself increasingly disenchanted and disengaging from politics, whereas I always used to be quite engaged.
You were, weren't you?
But I'm finding it too. I just need to be somewhere else mentally now than thinking about the political mess that we're all in. You know, I can't really see. I don't know. I look around and I kind of clinging to.
There's no happy ending.
There's no happy ending at the moment. That's what it feels like at the moment. So I'm retreating a little bit, which I don't think is quite a dishonourable but very human response.
I think you've done your tour of duty.
Maybe. Well, maybe. Yeah. But yeah. Just nose in a book now. And again, I came in by train this today, and the journey went like that because just nose in a book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Germinal, it's so beautifully. My God, Zola was earthy.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, I read Zola when I had to, but in the original French, when I studied French at university. And I kind of, in my mind, I couldn't really differentiate him greatly from the other great French realist novelists. Stendhal, Flaubert, Balzac, and all those. But actually, there's great differences. And Zola was punchy as all hell.
Really?
And like, it's like you read something from 19th century France and you think it's going to be rather aesthetic and flowery and distanced from like
romantic.
Not a bit of it.
Really?
He is down there scrabbling around with the
reality TV.
Yeah, it's a little bit in the same way that some Dickens, if you read Dickens, is a little bit, my God, he meant that, didn't he? Like that.
So good.
But but Germinal, which, you know, as I said, tells a story of the life of a coal miner. In the late 19th century, the first 11 chapters of this book tell the story of a single day in the life of a coal miner.
Whoa.
So it goes into immense detail and horrifying detail about what was going on.
So he must have done some serious research.
Yeah, I think he was one of those immersive guys who just like, now I'm going to find out about. Yeah, method writing.
Yeah.
Unlike our friend who did automatic writing, which is like the opposite of method, where you just let the spirit take you. I can't remember his name. Oh, his name was Spare. Austin something Spare.
Oh, yeah.
Of the psychic writing. Youth or whatever they were called.
Jorgensen's just doing his post-race interview and he's radiating.
What's next? Go on, make a wild prediction. What's he going to do for the rest of the year, Matthew Jorgensen? Nothing?
I think he's going to be a super domestique.
Tour de France?
Yeah.
Solid. Also, don't forget about how we mentioned it, I think either on the pod or in commentary, how good he is at one day racing as well, like the classics.
Yeah. He's just a great bike racer.
He'll be at Flanders.
Oh, yeah, he will. Actually, how cool is that? That he's kind of doing this and he'll still make their A team for classics.
I hope so, because that's certainly what he did last year for Movistar. Yeah. Now, maybe different team, maybe they've got too many riders, you know, and there's not. If he wants to do it, I'd take him all day long.
Win a classic, go long, catch him out, force the action.
Yeah. So that's good. Do we need any update on Flanders? Have the ticket sales gone? I don't know.
I don't know, actually.
I've got absolutely no idea.
No, we'll look into that.
Well, we'll those of you who are signed up,
we'll see you there.
We'll see you there.
That's going to be fun.
That is going to be a lot of fun. Really, it's quite soon, isn't it?
Go and check out Sport Tours International on their Tour of Flanders packages.
Yes.
We'll be there.
Yes. Mm. And, I tell you what, David. We were going to run a contractually obliged advert today.
Yeah.
So let's just do it organically.
Yeah.
100%. Right? Tell me about your sport and tell me where AG1 is slotting in at the moment, because you're sport mad still, aren't you?
I'm sport mad, but I'm also health mad, actually, Ned, as well. I'm kind of just looking after myself.
You are.
And it's kind of in the past, when I was even looking through my Strava and stuff, it was kind of last year, it was quite peak trophy. And I'm kind of falling into my daily habit of different things. And, you know, I do my meditation, do my journaling, do my sport. But then regards my nutrition, I start every day with my AG1, which is a foundational nutrition supplement.
70 high quality ingredients, but it's a single supplement. And within those, so represented in the mix of 70 high quality ingredients, you've got a bunch of
vitamins, minerals, whole food source nutrients, and more in a single scoop that takes seconds. It literally takes seconds. It's this really fine powder, just put in water, a couple of seconds, and it's mixed in, and it tastes good. And looks healthy.
Absolutely. It does taste good, actually. And it's there to help support your brain, heart, energy, and immune health, which even for a cycling commentator in his mid-50s, well, particularly for a cycling commentator.
More than most.
mid-50s, more than most, especially if he's clinging on to his job the skin of his teeth with youngsters coming in like Max.
But even here, I mean, I bring the travel, you can get travel packs, so you have the pot at home, I have the travel packs, and I take that with me wherever I go. And it's the one thing I can just do, and it's super simple, because in the past with supplements, it's been a nightmare.
So if you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. That's drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. Check it out. And so you're off home.
I'm off home. I've got a car picking me up in 47 minutes.
Perfect.
And flying back to Barcelona, driving home, and
a few days at home, and then
I've got a few weeks now until Flanders at the moment, which is lovely.
Right,
which I've been traveling quite a lot recently, so going to go settle into a routine and prepare for from Flanders. It feels like summer's rapidly approaching.
Yep,
and Dauphiné will be here in no time.
What's the weather like in Catalonia at the moment?
Because we got rain, thank God.
Oh, you needed it, right?
Oh my God, it's like we've been under serious drought. So it's been a bit rainy, which is great news. Yeah, it's nice. It's lovely.
Good. Mm. Well, I've had a WhatsApp message from Chat Stevens.
How's Chat?
He's just been checking the weather forecast for our little Italian holiday that we've got coming up next
How
week.
How is it?
It's spring-like. So
lovely.
16, 17, 18 degrees and pretty sunny.
Chats and Ned hit the road.
Yeah, he'll have his Brompton. Undoubtedly have his Brompton with his Lycra and his helmet and all that sort of thing. And he'll be smashing himself to bits.
Nice.
So the Italian, part one of our Italian odyssey kicks in next week as I fly out to Italy on Tuesday. I did look at taking a train, but it's just, I can't, they would not pay the five times the amount that it would take money-wise for me to take the train, because it would take best part 2 days. I need a hotel, and anyway, it's one of those agonizing double bind things. I did take the train out to Madrid.
Yeah, you did.
To go paddling earlier on in the year. But anyway, so Turin, and then Wednesday is Milano Torino.
Lovely.
Bit of a sprint fest.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly Mark Cavendish will be there, I would imagine. Yeah. But he won't be favourite. But he did win that a couple of years ago.
But he pulled out of Tirreno 6, so...
Maybe not. Yes.
Mm.
Did he pull out of UAE sick as well? No, he pulled out of UAE sick.
I thought Tirreno he had pulled out.
Well, maybe both. I don't know.
Yeah.
It hasn't quite happened for him yet. Mm. So maybe he won't be at Milano Torino. And indeed, I haven't actually double-checked to see what kind of race it is, but it should be a sprint. It's normally a sprint these days. But it used to end up on
the velodrome. Yeah.
Well, no, in the old Nolan days.
Well, that's when I did it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It used to finish in Turin's velodrome.
Lovely.
But more recently than that, it used to finish when it was at a different point in the calendar in the autumn as a warm-up race to Lombardia. Yeah. It used to finish on the Superga with two laps of the Superga. Ooh, Yates won it, didn't he? Fabio Aru, riders like that in the past. I think, won it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But they just, so weird, that so random that they do that with Italian one-day races.
Just change them around.
Gran Piemonte, let's just totally reinvent it.
Yeah.
So it's now pretty much a pan-flat sprinter's opportunity and a warm-up race for Caleb Ewan, really, for Milan San Remo, because Caleb Ewan always does
it's always going
inexplicably
for it.
Well at Milan San Remo.
It's wild, isn't it?
It's madness. Mm. It's madness. Yeah. And then we've got a couple of days off, and then we go over to San Remo. We check into the Hotel Paradiso.
Nice.
Which is absolutely, it's got this tiny little swimming pool. It's all tiled, obviously. Tiny little, teeny tiny rooms, Italian rooms, but they're lovely. They've got balconies that overlook the Med. Single beds. Nice. Very tall, skinny wardrobes in the corner.
Yeah.
Bit of bad artwork hanging on the wall. Tiled floors that you slip over on.
Beautiful.
A breakfast room that overlooks the Med with stale Italian cake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, awful coffee that Italians who care so much about cake and coffee and food just generally just put up with.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
It's totally weird. But I love staying in the Hotel Paradiso. And then the day before the race, I will go up and I will run out from
I'll run into San Remo from the wrong side. I'll run up the Via Roma along, and then I'll drop down onto the old railway line, which is now a cycle path, and I'll run along the coast, heading back up the Ligurian, up the course effectively, to the turn off to the Poggio, and then I'll run over the Poggio and back again, which is great. Just do me a little bit of reconnaissance. And invariably, I'll get overtaken by Alessandro Patacchi on his bicycle.
Alleget,
who's doing some filming for Rai, and he goes, Ciao,
Ned.
Ned. No, he doesn't know my name.
Still.
Years and years we've been working together.
Ciao, Bolting.
Not even that.
That's how they do surname a lot. Ciao, Mila.
Ciao, Mila.
Milar.
Miller, yeah. Miller Dowling.
Miller Dowling.
Well, it's been a pleasure, David. It's been a pleasure.
It has, Ned. Enjoyed that.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed podding. Mm. It's been an education. I've really enjoyed finding out the stuff that I found out this week.
That's been interesting.
It's been really good fun. Yeah. I can't remember any of it now, but it's been...
Well, it's there. It's recorded. You can go back and revise.
I can, but I won't. And thank you all for your excellent suggestions for merch. We will start putting plans in place post-haste.
Yeah, we will.
And we'll regroup, and we'll be, before you know it, it'll be Flanders.
Happy days.
Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.